Well, I guess this is the PenguinCon edition of the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich.
All right. And then we start off with a little bit of catch-up from the last week. It's like PenguinCon is the big thing going on.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, like, and like what we did and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah, I got a little something what I did.
Don't be ashy yet, Mary.
Yeah, all right. Yep, I was browsing the internet, and I came across an interesting site for me, and it actually was some icons for KDE, and it's based on that ROSA distribution, which I think came from Mandriva. So what I did is I went ahead and installed them, and they're really, I mean, the install file is like over 100 megabytes because it's got icons for everything, even the small things in Dolphin. So I spent a little bit of time doing that, and there'll be a link to the article so that anyone who's listening and wants to download those that icon set can do so. So that was one thing I did, and I also wrote a technology article for our community newsletter.
Oh, cool.
Was it Linux? Did you tell them all about Linux?
No, it wasn't. No, this one wasn't, but I am going to be introducing them to it. But what I did is I wrote it about Prey, the Prey project.
Oh, where yeah. the
it's
stolen,
an open source.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
pretty cool.
It is very cool. Preyproject.com is it's a site for this application that will track your stolen laptop. Or your missing laptop. Presumably yeah. It's stolen, but it could be someplace.
I remember Mary installed it and then reported hers as stolen. And then every time she would log in, her webcam would come on every 10 seconds and take a picture of her and
tested it.
And report back the location and the picture to the website.
Yeah, and we tested it, and it was really pretty pretty impressive. So anyway, I decided to write an article about that, especially because someone in my neighborhood's laptop was stolen, I think about a month ago.
Okay, not surprising. But all right.
Yeah.
What you should talk about is open source video monitoring. So everybody can get their own security camera set up in their houses. And
ZoneMinder, I think, is the one that I'm aware of.
ZoneMinder's one, but if you want like a whole like server solution, then Linux MCE has it built in too.
Linux MCE?
Yeah, MCE is Media Center Edition, but it also has a security monitoring system in it also, which is pretty cool. You can use cameras and sensors and... And then whenever the alarm goes off, it turns on all the TVs in the house and starts blaring the warning. And then you can, on your phone, you can call back in and start talking
and say,
to the
get
person.
Get out, thief, get out.
Yeah, you can.
We're watching
it's pretty cool.
You. We're watching you.
The police are on the way.
But you're in Detroit, so they're really not on the way.
Oh, yes, they are.
Okay, I had a customer get broken into. They had video cameras and the alarm going off. They took the cops so long that they cleaned them out, spray painted on the wall, "You've been robbed," and we're gone. The cops showed up 3.5 hours after the alarm started going off. Come on.
Wow. I'm not aware of that story. I think you made that up.
I did not.
All right, so anyway, that's what I've been doing. So, and Tony, what have you been up to?
It's been a slow week for me. I mean, just different things going on around home and stuff.
All right.
Anyway, Matt, do you have anything?
I did not really have any. I have a lot of personal stuff going on this week, but hopefully that's going to calm down. I'll have more to report next week on the,
all right.
on
okay.
the what was I doing this front.
All right. Well, good. We'll look forward to that. We'll look forward to hearing as to what you've been up to.
You know, there is one thing that Gib just reminded me, and I'll put a little plug in. I'm starting a little business, getting Gib's investing with me, that we're going to sell used laptops. And so this week that's picking up, and I'm going to be getting them, and they'll be for sale. D830s, check out BemisHosting.com, and you can buy it right through the website.
What do you have installed on it, Ubuntu?
Yeah. Excellent. Well, it comes with a COA for Vista.
They're going to put Windows on them. They're going to put Windows on them.
It depends. I'm probably going to run Ubuntu as default, and then if somebody balks at that, then I guess they'll put the other operating system on there.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's legally it has the key on it. And
it's
whatever.
Still not legal if you read the EULA, but I won't get into that.
It has the key on it. Anyway, let's go. I actually have a soundboard here I'm working with today, so let's...
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
All right. The kernel news this week. We had no release candidate this week, so the mainline remains 3.4-RC4. Our stable updates were on Sunday, the 22nd, at April 2012, at 16:47 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kaharman released kernel 3.0.29. There were 55 files changed, 500 files inserted, and 207 files deleted. Also on Sunday, April 22nd, at 16:49, Greg Kaharman released kernel 3.2.16. There were 69 files changed, 488 files inserted, and 247 files deleted. And then also on Sunday, April 22nd, at 16:50, Greg Kaharman released kernel 3.3.3. There were 78 files changed, 538 files inserted, 319 files deleted. And then, later in the same week, because Greg is a busy beaver, we had another update on Friday, April 27th at 10:14 Pacific Daylight. Kernel 3.0.30 was released with 65 files changed, 314 files inserted, and 266 files deleted. And then also on Friday, April 22nd at 10:46, Greg released 3.3.4 with 96 files changed, 544 files inserted, and 382 files deleted. And I have no kernel quote this week because I had too much stuff going on in my real life.
Sweet.
Oh, thank you for that update, Matt.
All right.
Yeah, so I know we tried doing some interview, or I tried an interview a few weeks ago with somebody that actually worked on kernel stuff, and I wanted to try to get a layman's description of what the kernel does, because both Mary and I, we're not kernel people, but that hopefully that'll come up later.
Is Matt?
Matt thinks he is.
All right.
Well, we know you report on it very well.
I stay on top of what's going on.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
We have a ton of distro releases this week. We have the reason it looked pretty big is because
half of them are Ubuntu.
Yeah, all the different Ubuntu releases. But aside from that, there's still a lot. Starting off on the 24th, we have Scientific Linux 5.8. And if you're not familiar with Scientific Linux, it's built on the source from Red Hat Enterprise. And it's mainly geared toward academic things. So it's similar. It's very similar to CentOS.
It's like CentOS in the fact that it's a Red Hat clone, but they add some extra packages in there to make working it with a scientific environment more easy.
Yeah. And then on the 24th also is Linux Mint 2012.04, which was the Debian edition.
Any comment on that?
I did use that as the base install for my hybrid installation that I'm running now.
All right.
Which we talked about last week, but yes, I can do it again if you like, Mary.
No, I heard enough last week.
Okay.
did you use the 2012.04 edition?
I did. I used it in the RC version. It was an RC when I did it.
Oh, right.
What I did was I installed Linux Mint Debian. And then I commented out all of the repositories except for the one that has Cinnamon in it, and then put the Debian testing repositories into my sources.list, and then did my first update and been running happily ever since.
All right. We also have Untangled Gateway was released on the 24th. That's a Debian distro designed for firewalls and gateways. There's a ton of distros for firewall type things. So it's kind of you just get in and you try it and see what you like. On the 25th, TinyCore Linux 4.5. That's one of the minimalist distros for desktop.
I've actually used that. It's 10 megabytes. The install is 10 megabytes.
That's pretty small. also on the 25th is it Dragon or Dragora?
Dragora. It's from Argentina.
2.2. It's a Libre distribution.
Which means you could go through.
Don't get me started on those Libre distributions.
Well, it means you could go through a little bit of pain if you don't have a wireless card that's got some free drivers for it, or you've got other issues.
Right.
But,
yeah. Well, this one's built from
scratch.
I just
don't want to have to work that hard to make my desktop work.
Right. Well, and last week there was a Libre release, and what was it called?
Triskel.
Yeah, Triskel.
It was 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks?
It was 2 weeks ago because we got that listener feedback.
Oh.
Or was it last week?
It was last week.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, it was last
week. All right, never
mind. Be quiet, Matt.
I'm in a daze.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about that when we get to the listener feedback.
Feedback at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we'll do.
Also on the 25th was ClearOS 6.2, the community, which it's a Red Hat-based Linux distribution designed for small business and servers and gateways.
Yeah, they just had a release three weeks ago or so, I think.
Well, they track Red Hat like Scientific and CentOS. So
okay.
Whenever Red Hat has one, then a couple of weeks later they have one.
Okay.
It wasn't ClearOS used to be called
Clark Connect.
Yeah, Clark Connect.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, but then they switched what they were based on. When they were Clark Connect, they weren't based on Red Hat.
Okay.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, on the 3rd was their development release, the RC1.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Anyway, next is Swift Linux 0.2.0, which is a lightweight distro with IceWM, and now it's based on Linux Mint Debian edition.
Yeah, you know, and they've got, I tell you, I went to the site, and not only do they have just the regular Swift, but they've got, like, the lightweight, they've got the Taylor Swift Linux, they have the Minneapolis Swift, and they have the Chicago Swift. I'm going to lobby for a Detroit Swift.
All right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, you know, we were
talking
about doing our own distro. Maybe we can do the SMLR Swift.
Yeah, but weren't we going to use like that OpenSUSE tool where you get to...
Mary wanted to.
Yeah. All right. So keep going there. Yeah. Keep going.
And then there's Backbox Linux 2.0.5, which is a Ubuntu-based for penetration testing.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm glad you mentioned that because when I was looking at these yesterday, I looked at Backbox and I thought, wow, penetration testing. I started looking at some of the apps that are associated with it, and this one kind of jumped out at me, Creepy. So I thought to myself, well, I'm going to check Creepy out. And
Creepy.
Yeah, Creepy. And so it's CREE.py, so it's a Python-based app, and what it does. It's in the Ubuntu repositories, but what it does is it will take you just feed it a person's Twitter name, and it will go out and it will find where they tweeted that. So if you and it'll go back a certain period of time, and so you will then see where they were when they made the various tweets. I installed it.
Wow.
I just arbitrarily pulled the guy's name off from Twitter, and I found out he's in San Diego. I found out the street he's on, and I thought to myself,
from
holy
geolocating,
smokes.
Huh? Geolocation stuff?
Geolocation, exactly.
Wow.
That's exactly what it pulled. So I wanted to mention that. So there'll be a link in the show notes to the app specifically, and as I said, it's in the Ubuntu repository.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the Android apps are doing that now. For just about anything, if you're going to do posting and stuff, it's going to put your location by default. So you got to look to see. If you don't want that on there, you got to actively shut that off.
Do you know of anyone who uses geolocation
to say,
there's
geolocation? Oh, I haven't seen anybody. I don't watch it much. Right.
Yeah. The question was, have we ever seen anyone transpoof geolocation?
Not yet, but I'm sure it's probably happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to just interject that. Tony, sorry for...
Yeah, no, that's all right. And actually, one other thing is that I know Matt's been putting on Google Plus a couple things. And just so you know, your location's going on Google Plus.
Yeah, whenever I do it from my phone,
It
puts my location
so
on
So you may want to look if you want to turn that off.
I don't care.
All right.
You can tell that I'm posted from the GFS parking lot while I'm waiting for my wife, if you want.
Yeah, it said something about Taylor. Anyway. All right, so on the 26th was the whole slew of the Ubuntu releases. So 12.04, Precise Pangolin was released. And so I'll read off the whole slew of them. Let's see, we have Ubuntu. Ubuntu, Ed Ubuntu, Myth Ubuntu, Zubuntu, Lubuntu, Studio, Ubuntu Studio, Ubuntu Remix, and that's all they have listed.
Yeah. the Ubuntu family.
Yeah, half of them actually was released on the 27th. I don't know what the difference was. Maybe it just hit DistroWatch the day later instead.
Yeah, and there have been quite a few, obviously quite a few reviews of it, and I did listen to one on, I think it was a Linux Action Show podcast, and it intrigued me so much that I went ahead last night and I installed Ubuntu 12.04, and I have to tell you that I was impressed with the Unity interface, but I was also very impressed with the HUD. And the fact that if you're a keyboard person and if you can do something on the keyboard, you don't have to go over to the mouse, that is really nice because you just type a few letters and up pops most likely the program that you're looking to run, and you can just go ahead and run it.
I can do that in mine, too. I just hit the super key and then start typing whatever I want.
Yeah, I'm sure it's pretty similar.
If you're not familiar with HUD, it's the heads-up display, and you just hit the super key or the Windows key, and then you start typing what you want, and then it sorts through all the lists instead of having to click on, you know, menu, then applications, then blah, blah, blah. And
it's kind of fuzzy searching. I mean, it just really...
I think GNOME 3 really started doing that also. So Cinnamon
it's works a GNOME
really
3
well.
Thing.
Yeah.
So that's Unity just stole it from GNOME 3.
So anyway, but it's pretty nice. And I think Ubuntu did a great job in this particular distro. So Tony, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah.
What else we got?
The 27th was Proxmox 2.1, which is the in virtual environment. It's an open source virtualization platform for running virtual appliances and virtual machines based on Debian. Oh, Matt's asking for the barista.
That's right.
And then the last release was on the 28th. Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's not the last release. As of yesterday, it was the last release, but... anyways, I'll get to the next one. We have Rosa.
Actually, that was a development release.
No, it's a distribution release.
Oh, okay. I guess I guess distribution is spelled D-E-V-E-L-O-P-M-E-N-T. Sorry.
You're out of date because the one I'm looking at right here says Rosa, distribution release.
Maybe they changed it. Cause
my distro page looks way different than yours. The colors are different.
Yesterday
you're outdated. I just refreshed.
I bet there was a. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think yesterday it said
distribution. You're pulling distribution. From cash, Matt. You're pulling from cash.
I think he had a typo and he fixed that. Anyway, so I guess it's a development release, not a. Anyways, and then Tails was released this morning. As we were recording, I did a refresh and it came up.
Oh, you're right. All of a sudden, the Rosa changed from a distribution to a development release.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
You were actually right for a change, Mary.
Yeah.
Anyway, so today on the 29th, Tails 0.11 was released. They're a Debian-based distro designed for anonymous internet surfing. They also have another name for it.
Porn surfing. No, just kidding.
Where is it? If you go to their website, it's not called Tails. It's called something else, and it's different. Anyways, let me look.
And so what it basically anonymizes your surfing, and it does so through...
TAIL stands for the Amnesiac Incognito Live System.
Yeah. Okay. And it uses the Onion Router, or Tor.
That's what I was figuring
it did. To anonymize your surfing. So if you're doing things that you don't want people to watch you, then that's an option. And they're running it on a live CD. Also, leaves no log files or anything behind, too.
It's really good for surfing porn at work.
All right. Well, that's what I have for the releases.
All right.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. What are our top five? We're gonna...
Oh, that's right.
I have new releases.
Let me get over to. I don't use this soundboard much. So let's number four.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right, so I refreshed it earlier, and now I have to go back and refresh it again because I've been surfing around a little bit on DistroWatch. But what I've noticed is a lot of the distros that are normally on there have been kicked off. Number five is OpenSUSE with 14, No, I changed it.
No, number five is Magia, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, with 1453.
Would there you like go.
Me to,
now
would you
it's
like
on
me to
there.
Do it for you this week?
Number four is Swift with 1475.
Hey, what's going on with Magia? Is it trending up or down?
Trending down.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I screwed up.
This is the second week in a row.
Oh, man.
All right, maybe I can help you out. Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
And then, Matt, what's Swift doing?
And Swift is trending up.
Number three is Fedora.
And trending down.
With 1727. Ubuntu is number two still with 4732.
And trending up. Only because they had a big distribution release.
And Mint is at number one with 5153.
And trending up.
Yeah.
Soon you'll see Matt's hybrid testing. Oh, no.
It's going to hit the distro releases.
So? Sounds like a house of
cards
to me.
Number 1,562.
All right. All right. Well, that's good. That's good.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, we have Google Drive released. Not so much for Linux. The long-rumored online storage from Google has been announced as a reality. Unless, of course, you were running a Linux desktop, I don't know, but if it were me and my entire business was built on top of Linux, that it might be the first client I produced. They have an Android client. How difficult can it be? Every subscriber will get 5 gigabytes for free with the opportunity to upgrade to any of the following plans. There's like 8 of them. I'm not going to read them all. I'm only going to say like 3. So you can get 25 gigabytes of storage for $249 a month, 1 terabyte for $49.99 a month, or 16 terabytes for $799.99 a month. So they have a lot of storage out there.
So I can put all my songs up there then.
You could, yes.
Yeah, you know, so. Just a comment on that too. 5 gigs for free is pretty good because I think the going free size
is 2.
Was 2.
Yeah, for most places it's 2.
I would not be surprised if they up it. So what you could really do is get Spider Oak, 5. Was it Dropbox? 5?
Dropbox is 5?
Assuming they go up to 5.
Everybody else is saying it's going to go up to 5.
Three, yeah, you have 3 of them for free.
Because, yeah, Box will go up to 5. Yeah.
Anyway, but I pay for mine.
You can access the service at drive.google.com, although it is currently not ready for me, except it is ready for me, because I went back now, and they said it is ready for you.
Ooh.
So, it will support over 30 file types that you will be able to open right in your browser. It will integrate with Google Plus, Gmail, and Google Docs. You can share files or folders with anyone and control whether they will be able to view, edit, or comment on your stuff. Extensive search capabilities, including OCR for pictures and scanned documents, and my favorite feature, document rollback for up to 30 days. Google Drive tracks all changes so that when you save a document, a new revision is saved, and you can roll that back for as long as 30 days. So that is the new Google Online Storage, Google Drive.
And so, Matt, is it like Dropbox where you maintain a local copy and it's backed up to?
Once they actually have the app for Linux, yes.
Okay.
But they don't currently have an app for Linux, which I discussed at the beginning.
Yep, I know. No, but I'm just saying in general, the whole concept behind it, if it's like Dropbox.
Yeah, it will be once they have an app for Linux, I said at the beginning.
Yeah, I know. Okay. It's early.
Next up, Slackware, alive and well despite rumors. The main website for Slackware went down, and the rumor mill went into overdrive. These discussions were hot and heavy on linuxquestions.org and DistroWatch. The discussions very quickly shifted from website problems to the long-term viability of Slackware. This was compounded by Eric Hameliers, a top Slackware contributor, when he posted this early in the Linux Questions discussion: old hardware, lack of funds. I am sure that it was not his intended effect, but this was like throwing gasoline onto an already raging fire. The conversation quickly veered into the what can be done to save Slackware land. The fires were then fanned even higher when Caitlin Martin, developer of Yarik Linux, which has made this statement on DistroWatch, disparaging the long-term viability of Slackware. You remember that comment about my involvement in the development of a Slackware derivative? Forget it. We're already discussing about delaying the release and rebasing it off of something with a more secure future. This successfully torqued off a huge number of people in the discussion on both websites. She responded to these comments by maintaining her stance that she was only concerned about upstream stability. The positive to come out of Martin's comments was that it prodded Hameliers into clarifying his comments. The Slackware.com server is down. This is a technical malfunction. It costs money to do something about that. Something will be done about that server. But if it takes a while, it is most likely caused by prioritizing and finances. Slackware was without its own web server for a long time in the past, and still active are ftp.slackware.com and connie.slackware.com. So what's the big deal? This turning of the rumor mill is pretty much unfounded, and I see some of the same old people pouring oil on the fire as usual. There is no reason to doubt the availability, stability, and long-term viability of Slackware. The distribution has not been a one-man show for some time. The development effort is substantial and plainly visible in the changelog, and there are no plans to switch to another development model or even ditch the distribution. Hameliers went into greater detail about Slackware's financial situation on Linux Questions. He says there, it's not that difficult if everybody suddenly stops buying stuff from the Slackware store. Then Slackware will not last another year in its present form. The store sales are Pat's income, and it feeds several other people too. But remember, the core team surrounding Pat do not get a penny of these revenues at all. Therefore, the rest of the team is not impacted in any way by Slackware sales figures, and we will keep working with Pat on the distribution, just like we have been doing for the past years. Look at the changelog. Sometimes there is a period of relative silence, but that does not mean that no work is being done. Like last week, the updates can come in big gulps. Slackware will not die. Its philosophy will not change. The team is dedicated and full of ideas. If people start chickening out and cancel their subscriptions, then that is a pity. Thankfully, I see lots of other Slackware users who decided that this is a good point to make a donation or buy something at the store, if their financial situation allows it, and I went and bought a hat. Thanks to all of you for supporting the cause, and remember, if you cannot financially support Slackware, then helping your fellow Slackware users in forums like this one is an invaluable form of support as well. Slackware will not die because of financial issues. It will die if all of its users leave. As Hamelmeers points out, a project like Slackware can never really go away. As long as there's a strong community around it, even if the project folds financially, and Patrick did not transfer the copyrights on Slackware to the community, it would continue under a different name. However, for now, there's absolutely no indication that any of that is either in the near or distant future.
You know, man, just hearing you report on that story and the fact that people step up when they heard about the possibility of Slackware, or at least the rumor of Slackware discontinuing. I mean, that's indicative of the open source community in general. I know a couple of weeks ago we talked about the Humble Bundle of the indie games, and the biggest average contribution didn't come from Windows users, it came from Linux users.
Yeah, Linux always leads the Humble Bundle
exactly.
In largest contribution to receive the Humble Bundle.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep, exactly. So,
because if you're not familiar with how the Humble Bundle works, it's a game bundle that's cross-platform. They make it for it's all the games available on it are play on Linux, Windows, or Mac, and you can pay whatever you want for it. You can just pay $1. You can pay $100, and they track like which distributions, which operating systems are providing the most money, and the largest contributions to the project in order to receive the Humble Bundle always come from Linux.
Yeah, I think they just released another bundle last week, I think.
Not total dollar amount. That by far comes from the Windows users. Okay.
But the per user
contribution is what we're talking about.
Yeah, it was called Binicula or Binocula or something like that was the last release. Yeah.
I don't know if I trust you pronouncing it.
Tony is not our king of pronunciation.
Yeah, and we've given him a hard time on many episodes. It's actually Botanicula.
Oh, all right.
There you go.
All right. And moving on, we have the Hungarian government solidifies its commitment to ODF. Last year, the Hungarian government announced that from April 2012 forward, all government documents needed to be produced in an internationally recognized open document standard. To further this commitment, they're going to invest 370 million Hungarian forint, which is approximately 1.7 million U.S. dollars, in applications that utilize open document formats. The two main beneficiaries of this investment will be the Department of Software Engineering at the University of, and I'm not even going to try it, it's S-Z-E-G-E-D, and Molteresio, an open source development company. Multiratio developed an open office suite originally based on openoffice.org called EuroOffice. They are now going to produce a version for tablets and improve the collaborative functions within EuroOffice. Kazimir Kolesar, a developer at Multiratio, said that the development responsibilities would break out like this. The University of Szeged, whatever, S-Z-E-G-E-D, will do the quality assurance and usability-related research and tool development. Multiratio will develop the Office application and work on several extensions. All I have to say is good on you, Hungary. I wish that countries like mine would do more to push open formats. I have even considered suing entities like my state government for their continued use of proprietary formats on their website, which the state of Michigan does. If you go to the state of Michigan's website, a lot of the documents that they have there for download are all in .doc format.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's just, it's horrible. So.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of make the assumption that everybody's running Microsoft Word, which isn't necessarily the case.
Correct.
But in addition to you mentioning that, I came across something, and I'm kind of jumping in here, Matt, if you're not done yet.
I'm not, but we'll let it slide. Go ahead, Mary.
All right. actually, Microsoft Office, you know, they, I think with Office 2007 Service Pack 1, they are compatible with ODF 1.1, but Office 15, which, you know, they're kind of renaming their Office suite, it's going to support ODF 1.2. Because you remember a few years ago, they tried to put forth their own standard, was OOXML.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They got shot down.
It's got too many initials. It's not going to succeed. But
yeah, they got shot down hard.
Yeah, so anyway, but that's pretty good. Keep going.
All right, and moving on. Less than 25% of OSS, which stands for open source software, used in corporations is managed correctly. Sonatype released the results of a recent survey showing that 500 out of 2,500 respondents said they were locked down to only use corporate-approved components. Only 49% that their companies had a policy in place. Then 63% indicated that their corporate standards were not enforced or that they did not have a policy. Sonatype also noted that the use of open source components is on the rise. Almost 80% of respondents said that they used open source tools regularly. Around 50% have migrated to an open source development stack, and over 65% claim to contribute to open source projects. In their press release, Sonatype said this about the use of open source. Key to modern development practices is the use of open source components to build mission critical applications. Yeah, the question is, where do we think web-based software is going, like web-based word processing and things like that? And I think it's going to be on the rise. Google Docs especially has this thing for K-12, and if you get the kids indoctrinated into this new process, then it's just going to happen. And that's the problem now, is that Microsoft gives such huge discounts to schools that's why the Microsoft philosophy is what gets indoctrinated. Do you know how much I pay for a Windows 7 professional license? $50. Okay, it's ridiculous how much they discount the schools just so they can get the children indoctrinated, but yeah, hopefully that's going to change. And Google Docs, I think, is a good move towards it. So, moving on, we have Red Hat, SUSE, and IBM form partnership while Canonical stays on the sidelines. IBM's new Power Server line will be available with either Red Hat or SUSE Linux, but not Ubuntu. After more than a year in development, IBM rolled out their new Power Server systems and solutions. These machines are Linux-specific, utilizing the Power 7 processor-based hardware. These machines are targeted at mid-range to large-range enterprises. They are designed for big data analysis and delivering open-source infrastructure services. Canonical chose not to offer their server product on these units. Could that be due to their fear of having to actually support an enterprise-class customer?
No.
This is how IBM envisions the use of this new server line. The new Power Linux solutions and supporting systems are designed to provide customers with lower development time and costs and greater performance, dependability, and workload density than competitive x86 pack platforms at similar price points. So, where was Canonical in all of this?
They were busy. They were busy releasing one of the best distributions that they've ever had. That's what they were doing, Matt.
They also had been working with IBM to deliver Ubuntu on IBM System P mini computer. That partnership, however, floundered into nothing. Here is how Mark Shuttleworth, Canonical's founder, spun the announcement. We don't support power because by mutual agreement with IBM, there's little to no overlap between the power user base and Ubuntu. People are choosing Ubuntu for farms of commodity servers, and power has been adopted for highly specialized mission-critical roles. If IBM ever wanted to reach either the cloud or bulk computing market with power, then I expect the stats above would be relevant for their choice of OS because they reflect the real choice of those markets. And my response to that is, huh? I had a hard time following that statement, but what I think it boils down to is this. IBM and Ubuntu agree that Ubuntu would be hard-pressed to actually support a large enterprise customer. IBM, Red Hat, and SUSE still believe that there is a market out there for the big machine built on quality hardware, as opposed to large farms of x86 systems trying to do the job of a bigger machine.
Yeah, I want to say one thing is that Matt seems to have a lot of news items because he does the most research, and because he writes them out, we don't want to take those away from him. But we usually end up finding a lot of the same articles because they hit all the same websites. So if Matt always seems like he's talking more, it's because he does a little bit more work than we do.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's just my contribution. I do that.
He does more writing. I spend enough time checking stuff out.
How long do you think it takes me to put that together, Mary?
Hour?
I'm kidding. That's like 18 hours worth of work a week.
I'm sure it is. No, Matt, you're right. You're right. I'm not going to take that away from you. I was kidding.
All right. Yeah, so I don't have any news this week, so let's go on into the convention scene.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm actually, normally I do this our first podcast of the month, but because the first of the month is really early in the week, I decided to kind of get a jump start on it. So what we have going for the month of May, we've got and DEF CON 3, and that's the Android Developers Conference. That's May 14th through the 17th, and that's a technical conference for software developers building Android apps, in case you couldn't figure that out. Next weekend, we've got Libre Graphics Meeting 2012. That conference is a number one event for users and developers of free software for graphic design, photography, 3D modeling, and animation. That's going to be in Vienna and at the Technicum. We also have this month, May 25th through the 26th, in London. I love London. It is FLOSSY 2012. FLOSSY is a free two-day event for women who work with or are otherwise interested in free and open source software. So that's pretty cool. If I were closer, I'd probably go. May 28th through June 1st, we've got the Linaro Connection. That's a convention to discuss and develop features, infrastructure, and optimizations for the Linux kernel, Android, Ubuntu, and beyond on ARM processors. May 23rd through the 26th, we've got Linux Tag. That's they characterize themselves as the most...
Linux Tag.
Oh, thanks. Normally, I'm pretty good at pronouncing those stuff. All right, thanks. Linux Tag, it's the most important, or they characterize themselves as the most important place for Linux and open source software in Europe. And this year it's going to be in Berlin at the fairgrounds.
Because it means Linux Day. Tag is day in German.
Well, then actually, it's 3 days long, though. But, all right. All right, and moving right along, we've got FOSCOM, and that's May 12th and 13th this month. FOSCOM, and that actually stands for Free and Open Source Software Communities. It's a Greek conference aiming at open source enthusiasts, developers, and communities. It's going to be taking place in Syros, Greece. And then finally, on our list of conventions this month, we've got the Open Source Business Conference 2012. That's May 21st and 22nd out in San Francisco, California at the Hyatt Regency. That conference is geared toward the influence of open source on cloud data and mobile software. So links for all these conventions will be in the show notes. That's all I got on the convention scene this month.
All right, cool.
All right, a lot of them going on.
Yeah, a lot. Actually, and I just noticed that I didn't really read them in date order either, so I will go ahead and reorganize them before we put them up.
All right.
So FYI for you, Tony.
Thanks. Mary's telling me that because I typically do the show notes, post them on the website.
And look, we have actually our fourth audience participant walking in right now. We had a third one come in earlier that I neglected to mention.
Kind of early on a Sunday morning. Okay, so that's it for me on that front.
All right. Well, I think we should go on to what we found cool at PangraCon.
Yes.
Yes.
We said in unison. And actually, well, aside from all the very cool techie sessions that I attended, the Linux, Core Linux Security, which I thought was very good.
Oh, yeah, that was going to be my favorite. That's my favorite one that I've attended so far. Mm-hmm. Was Mark, I think his name is Stanislav.
That's Stanislav.
Stanislav.
Stanislav, yep. Mark's presentation was excellent.
Oh, it was incredible.
Pretty geeky, but I loved it.
I loved it, too. I found out about a thing called GR Security that I hadn't known about. Mm-hmm. So I started reading up a little bit about it. It's kind of like SE Linux for the kernel. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I really like that talk, too.
And I think one of my favorites is actually not even a tech one, because PenguinCon, for those who are not aware of it, is also includes science fiction and other interests in addition to Linux and technology. But I went to the H.P. Lovecraft Now and in the Future, mainly because I've always enjoyed H.P. Lovecraft, so... That was pretty interesting for me. It was a panel discussion, actually, and it was interesting.
Cool.
And there was another thing that we learned about. Mary learned about it at the core file system or something.
Oh, that was the
where you could redirect the file directly to your speakers. And yesterday morning, we were sitting in the Starbucks down here doing this, just laughing our butts off, going, "How geeky are we? We're sitting in Starbucks redirecting text files to our speakers and making static and laughing about it." But I have one ready to go.
All right, go ahead.
That was an LS minus LA on my home directory to redirect it to my speakers.
So that's what all of those files sound like in RAW. In the RAW.
So I'm sorry. So,
I said that's what all your files sound like in the RAW.
That's at least a listing of all my files and directories.
With no sound processing, but of course they wouldn't even play. They wouldn't process through audio, but raw sound, pretty good, pretty good.
We just thought it was hilarious. In case you can't tell, since I'm still laughing my ass off about it.
Yeah, okay. Cool. And then what I thought was really cool is that I went into, I've been using it for a while, and we mentioned it a little earlier, but Byobu. It's BYOBU, and I think we convinced Matt to use it too. There's a lot more to it than what I knew about.
You've convinced Matt to look at it. I do think it's cool, and I will look at it. But it is an Ubuntu thing.
It's a Python wrapper around either Screen or Tmux, and that was the new thing that I didn't know about, is that for Tmux also. But there's a lot to it that I like the tiling features. I think that's what I'm going to start using.
The what features?
Tiling.
Tiling.
Oh, yeah, the tiling. Okay.
Where you can run multiple terminal sessions in one window.
Yeah, that's
so you can see them all at once, right. Not just tabs going around.
That's what I thought was the coolest thing. Was like if you had your session full screen, you could have a big one at the top, and then you could have multiple smaller ones at the bottom, and then with a key combination, mm-hmm. you can rotate through them. So like if you notice something going on down there that you really want to get a better look at, you can just swing it up to the big one. And it was really, really cool.
Yeah, like if you're tailing a log file and you're watching what it's doing, and you just let that run in the background, and then all of a sudden you see it start doing something, you want to bring it up larger, you just hit a key combination that brings it up large.
Oh, so you could be mounting something, a hard drive or something. If you're trying to test something, your USB or whatever, testing, and then you could be taking a look at the log file just to see real time what's going on with it without having to go back and forth. Oh, that's
yeah, it's really cool. And you can do all this without even X running. You can do it, like if you're going to SSH into a server and run multiple sessions on a server.
Because it uses Screen or Tmux, you don't even need X. It blew my mind.
All right. Well, that's pretty good, Tony.
Yeah.
Because normally I'll do like SSH change. I'll SSH into this server, and then from that server I'll SSH into that server. And that gets really confusing after a while. You know, where am I? What am I doing?
Yeah, and... I was going to say, too, when you're done, I've got a kind of an interesting little...
Yeah, that's all I had.
Yeah, okay. I think I mentioned earlier in our episode here that I had taken a listen to the Linux Action Show just a bit. And they had talked about... they had actually had heard this from another podcast, so they had inserted it into their show. And this is an app that's available in Chrome, the Chrome browser, because, you know, those of you who run Chrome know that you've got the Chrome Web Store, the Chrome App Store, where you can install various apps right in the browser. This one is the Chrome Remote Desktop app. And actually, it says beta, but it's pretty solid. And what it does is it allows two people who are running Chrome in different locations. It allows one to remote into the other. You have to obviously first install it, and then you have to set up who's going to be the share E and who's going to be the share OR. And then once that's established, then the person that's going to be sharing their desktop gets a code that then they give to the other person by telephone or by some method, who then has to insert it. And then once that's done, they are connected, and then they have access to the desktop to do support or do whatever they need to
now,
do.
Is it two-way? Like, do they each have access to each other's desktops, or does the share E only have access to the share OR's desktop?
The share OR has access to the share E's desktop. You had it pretty close, just reverse it.
So it's kind of like TeamViewer.
That
was kind of my impression of it. But
it's a remote assistance tool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to have that right in a browser is pretty cool.
That is very cool, because then you don't have to walk somebody through installing TeamViewer and then getting. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that'll be in the show notes for anybody who's interested in that. But again, if you've got Chrome, just go to the Chrome store and type in remote desktop, and you'll see it. You'll see it. You can install it. And then call up one of your friends and set up a test session and just see how it works. Okay, so that's what I got for some neat stuff this week.
Cool.
All right.
It's listener feedback time.
So we have one person emailed us this week. And I lost my note.
It was, I can't remember his name, but
Jay Mathis.
Yeah, because we had talked about the Triskel release last week, and then he said, "You guys seem pretty negative about Triskel," which I wasn't really negative about Triskel. I was negative about Libre distributions in general. And if you're not familiar with what a Libre distribution is, it's a distribution that strips anything proprietary out, such as your Wi-Fi drivers and all kinds of things like that. And I just don't want to have to work that hard to make my desktop work.
Yeah, Libre isn't free. Libre isn't free as in, like, free of freedom.
Oh, so it's not, like, follows Virgo, Libra. Okay, I got it. No, just kidding. All right, so, well, I'm going to take the challenge on now. I'm going to, you know, because if Jay Mathis felt that we were maybe a little negative on it, I'm going to go ahead.
He felt strongly about Triskel. He was like, he's big into Triskel, so
I'm going to take on that challenge and install it, and then report back on my experience, and we'll take a look at it, discuss it a little bit, and we'll kind of see where it goes. But again, as I've said before, and we've said probably numerous times, the great thing about Linux is the choice.
That's right.
And people who are purists and really want to just run
if you're in that Richard Stallman
proprietary
camp.
Free software or OS, you certainly can do that.
Right. And we've talked about that in the past. I'm much more, as opposed to the FSF camp and the OSI camp, I'm a pragmatist. I just want it to work and work well.
Mm-hmm. And not be Windows. All right. I'm sorry. That was a little editorial thing I threw in there.
Yeah, all right.
All right. So that was our, I guess that was our feedback for the week.
Yeah,
right?
That's all we had for feedback.
So thanks, Jay Mathis. Look, listen next week and you'll hear the results.
All right.
I think we're coming toward the end of our show here.
Yeah,
is there anything else you guys?
I don't have anything else. I'm tapped out.
All right. So at the end of each of the show, I'm sorry, Mary, did you have anything else?
No, I was just listening attentively to you.
All right. At the end of each of the show, I play a song. I call it the outro music. Yeah. And
it's always Creative Commons and freely available.
And punk, I think, usually.
No, not usually.
Just punk. The last couple
just
of weeks.
Last one was supposed to be punk, but again, it disappointed me and let me down. But.
Right. So this week is Can't Stop It. It's by Cher. Take a listen.
I'm sorry for this whole idea. I'm sorry for being here out there. But hey, I can't stop it anyway. I can't stop it anyway.
contract. I'm sorry for each killed elephant. I'm sorry for the kick and shake. He's bombarded. Hey, I can't stop it anyway. I can't stop it anyway. I can't stop it anyway. Anyway. I'm sorry for each terrorist. I'm sorry for your broken fist. I'm sorry for being such a fool. I'm sorry that I've been so cruel. But hey, I can't stop it anyway. I can't stop it anyway. I can't stop it anyway. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So at the end of the show, we always have our outro of
comment.
Comment, yeah. So you've been listening to the PengoCon edition of the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich.
Hey, see you next week. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyway,
okay. Where's the banjo? I didn't hear any banjo.
Ska is not banjo.
There's no
weren't
banjo.
Weren't we going to try and get something that had banjo and sitar in it this week?
Oh, we were. last week. And the reason why we did that is because we reviewed, I reviewed Chakra Linux last week, and I kind of raved about it. And this is not going to be on our episode, is it?
Yeah, we'll throw it in.
We'll cut it. we'll cut this out. Yeah, we're going to edit this out. but for those of you trying to figure out why we're talking about banjo music and sitar music, I installed Chakra Linux, and I was so impressed with it. First of all, it was originally a fork from Arch Linux, and which, you know, didn't mean a lot to me, except that once I started digging in and doing my research, and the fact that Chakra Linux runs the latest of everything, and it's a pure KDE-centric distribution, I was immediately interested. And that doesn't mean you can't install GTK apps, but what they do is they bundle them together, so you've got your programs, and then you've got the bundles. And you've got a bundle manager so that you can install it. And it installs it similarly to the way Mac installs software, where it's kind of like an ISO that gets kind of mounted and it's available. All the required libraries are in that bundle. And I think we talked last week about it being, there could be a little bit of bloat.
Yeah, a little bit of system bloat because you would wind up installing the same libraries over and over.
But, you know, who cares? Who cares when you got a 300 gig hard drive? But anyway, I mean, that was my take on it. So what I wanted to do, Chakra, from Hindu, it's these energy centers. And so I was going to put a little sitar music in there. We forgot to play it, and then we played it later, and it was kind of funny.
And then I said, well, hey, that kind of sounds like a banjo.
Yeah. And so from there it just went downhill.
Yeah.
So then we decided we're going to try to find some music that had sitar and banjo, which I don't think there is any.
But we were very unsuccessful last week. We did a quick search last week, and we could not find anything that had sitar and banjo in it. But that was supposed to be Tony's mission.
Yeah. Well,
so you failed.
No, I just failed again. Oh.
So anyway, but that was it.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HBR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.